we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a notice seen in the window of a fish and chip shop in Belfast, read by Peter Donaldson.
Extra large cod pieces with salad and chips.
Thanks to Liz Martin of Belfast for that. Let's meet the teams. Welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Sue McGregor. Challenging them on my left, Jeremy Hardy and Alan Corran. Andy, why is New Labour going soft on crime, soft on the causers of crime?
Soft on the what?
Causers. Those who cause.
Oh, this is a fox. This is a hunting question.
No.
Well, what's causes then? You mean cause? Why do you pronounce it in that strange way?
Because I'm from the north. Soft on the causes, not courses. Causes.
There was a middle-aged white middle-class complaint on the BBC. Just had there. He can't help being born in Leeds.
Yeah.
There's no such word as causer. Is there?
Yes, there is. Well, that's what he said, though.
There
he said causer.
There is now.
There isn't.
You've been listening to my word.
Andy, why is New Labour going soft on crime, soft on those who commit crime?
It's a good question, Simon. The government is reclaiming the streets. This is what David Blunkett, the Home Secretary, said. It's time to reclaim the streets, which is a slogan that he's nicked, I think, from the anti-globalism protesters. Now, I thought that was a bit alarmist. I don't want to hear the Home Secretary saying, "My God, it's a jungle out there." I thought that the whole point was to try and diminish the fear of crime as well as the actual crime figures themselves. So they convened a special committee, I think, which means that most of the muggers will be off the streets now once they hear that there's a committee to deal with it. And I think Tony said, right, David, you go out with an iron bar after 8 o'clock. They've given him a Rottweiler as a blind dog. Basically, there's going to be a huge clampdown on crime because there's a whiff of panic.
What they're also going to do is tag people, more people, aren't they?
So you can spot them.
It's sort
you want
of
to be mugged, you've got to keep your eyes at about ankle level.
Yeah.
And if you see a bloke with a winking electronic belt on his ankle, you run.
You run. And
complicated policy, but it might just work.
What about all these packs of dogs that are going to be redundant after fox hunting's banned? Surely, if they train the dogs to chase men in stripy jumpers with bags with swag written on them, that would be helpful.
They'd just go after the urban fox, and the urban fox would run down an alley and then turn round to them and say, "All right, want some, do ya?" Stop and search only works, though, doesn't it, if it's completely universal, if everybody is stopped and searched all the time. And I don't think I want to leave. I'd rather be mugged occasionally than shaken down by the police. Even I don't want to know what's in some of my pockets. There's all kinds of manky things, bits of old banana peel and things that your daughter spat out when she was a toddler. And it probably would be better if we were searched more often, because at least we would empty our pockets from time to time. Might find our keys.
They're proctologists in the police, yeah. Huh? The serious rectum squad can be up you like a ferret.
25 points.
David Blunkett has been criticised for introducing early release dates for prisoners. Good news is they're not letting Jeffrey Archer out yet. Jeremy, who's commandeered our commandos?
We're sending 1,700 troops to Afghanistan because it's over and we won. Remember that, we won. And we've won so much that we're sending some troops for a lap of honour. 1,700 of them. And it's very difficult for the Tories because normally their role is to be more bellicose and bloodthirsty than Labour. But now it's more or less impossible. Ian Duncan syndrome hasn't got much to kvetch about because they love it all.
He doesn't know anything about it, does he? Because the government won't tell Parliament that they've done it, will they?
I think everyone knows that there is a war in Afghanistan. Yeah. They spend too much time in Parliament, those people. They don't read the papers.
Troops who are being sent are mainly based in Arbroath, where they're trained at fighting at high altitudes, mostly because the local pubs are more than 1,000 feet above sea level. Alan, which police station could do with a bit of neighbourhood watch?
It's not Castlereagh, is it?
Yes, it is Castlereagh.
Well, they've nicked everything from Castlereagh.
Yeah.
Someone has moved in into the most security-conscious building in the most security-conscious country in the world, and they've made away with the ashtrays, everything. I mean, all the security of Northern Ireland was in a tin on the mantelpiece. and someone's taken it.
They had passes. They must have been recognised on the way in. They had ID.
But when you look at the photographs of this, this is the most important security building in Northern Ireland. It's just a bit of old chicken wire.
Yeah, but they keep changing the name of the police. That is a problem. We don't know in Northern Ireland. One week they're Consignia, the next they're... they've got different uniforms because they're all politically insensitive. So if anybody walks in and says, I'm a policeman, I mean, he could be. I mean, it could be Group 4, it could be a rat exterminator, it could be anything. So anybody is allowed in anywhere in Northern Ireland because he says, I'm a policeman, it's the new name.
They're missing all the folders in the cases in which people say, is there collusion in Northern Ireland between paramilitaries and the RUC? And I think we've got the answer now, really, haven't we?
You're being very paranoid. It could just have been an opportunistic burglar. You know, they probably went out at lunch, left the door open... And he's gone in. He's probably sitting there now with this list. He's saying, I can't find a fence for this list of 800 informers.
Castlereagh was a Conservative Prime Minister. And when he died, Lord Byron wrote this little bit of doggerel. He said, posterity shall ne'er survey a nobler grave than this. Here lie the bones of Castlereagh. Stop, traveller, and piss.
Simon, Jeremy's going to start nicking gags from Byron, I want to, I don't want that reflected in the points.
And Shelley said...
Oh, don't
and
start.
I saw Death along the way, he wore the mask of Castlereagh. And Pam Eyre said, oh, don't know much about that.
We start round two with a cutting from the Richmond Borough Guardian.
A spokesman for Richmond Council said the point of not collecting the refuse is that it causes the residents to telephone and therefore gives the council a chance to talk to them about why their rubbish was not collected.
Thanks to Kate Pearce of Teddington for that. Andy, who will have a licence to kill if Blair gets the middle way?
Yes, this is the compromise deal that's in the offing for the banning of hunting. And the compromise is, as I understand it, that they will ban hunting with dogs of hares and stags on the grounds that hares are cuddly little fluffy creatures and stags are noble monarchs of the glen that appear in paintings in Woolworths. whereas foxes are vile chicken murderers. And therefore, hunt the fox with dogs if you can prove that killing them with dogs would be less cruel than any other method. Now, I can only presume that the dogs are now going to be trained in humane killing. And they'll be possibly offering counselling to the fox. I mean, I'm a bit old fashioned. I tend to the view that you can't really make distinctions when it comes to cruelty. But I've been in arguments with country folk who say, but it's nature, you see. The fox predates on smaller creatures. We predate on the fox. That's just Darwinism in action. But if you think about it, a mugger could apply the same principle when he jumps you down an alley, couldn't he? If he's bigger and stronger, he could just say, it's not cruel, it's just nature.
Sue McGregor and I are neighbours.
Yes, there are foxes where we are.
Well, yes, and we have a common MP, in fact, dead common MP in Frank Dobson, who voted to keep foxes out of Camden Town. You will not be able to raise geese in Camden Town anymore. It's going to be murder.
And then Ken Livingston will put a congestion charge on foxes.
Well, that'll be a nightmare, because I live in Streatham and most of the foxes have got cars where I live.
I was a bit unsettled because the news broke and the Telegraph, and indeed the Times, had the same sequence of photographs, which was Charles, you see, being run after by Camilla. And I thought, Jesus, she's going to tear him limb from limb. The idea of Camilla with her nostrils flared, deprived of killing foxes, sinking her fangs into the next king and tearing him to bits, it's quite exciting, really.
He enjoys it and it's more humane than shooting him.
Jeremy, why did a Channel 4 producer take the dumbing down of TV 2, literally?
Oh, this is the non-17-year-old. They did a horrid prank on this school. They wanted to make a documentary about what it's like to lie and go to school when you're 30. And so they got this guy to go to school and pretend that he was 17. And he rubbed a lot of grease into his face and he put a shuttlecock down his underpants. And what annoys me is this man was 30 and people didn't spot the fact that he was claiming to be 17 years younger. That school should have kept quiet and then just got back at them by sending them an 11-year-old and saying, I'm the new head of commissioning for documentaries.
Yes, a 30-year-old Oxford graduate, TV producer Sheridan Simov, posed as a clueless sixth-form pupil called Howard for a Channel 4 documentary. The staff were said to be very distressed at the deception, especially the Canadian supply teacher who was dating him at the time. Andy, which chorus of singers have perfect pitch?
Yes, this is a story. They did a survey of all the fans around the various grounds. They discovered that Southampton fans have lovely pitch, like sort of Welsh people, only nicer. And my team, Chelsea, came halfway, which is pretty good, considering the only song the fans sing is an obscene one about celery. And one that goes, ah, you're crap. Which I've cleaned up for Radio 4 purposes. So, but anyway, it's Southampton.
It was a funded project from some university. It wasn't even a department. Was given money to look into something. They usually look into things like, can pubic hair in soap actually form the letters of your own name by accident? And this department, they actually said, why don't we go and record every league club and the songs that are sung and put them through this machine which works out perfect pitch or all the rest and find which are the most tuneful. I mean, that is where the money goes on university expenditure these days.
But there are other researchers who say that the very fact that the team is playing at home means that the testosterone level in all the players wangs up so high that they... As somebody who's had a great deal of experience of testosterone levels from some of my partners on the Today programme, I feel I'm something of an expert on
that
this.
That wasn't in your book, was it?
No. Oh, yes, it is. Oh, yes, it is.
It did the desk move for you, too?
I bet you didn't share the soap in that bathroom.
Do you know, that is the first time I realised that wang was a verb.
Southampton fans are reckoned to be the best singers in the Premier League. They narrowly beat Manchester United to top place, and that was only because Posh Spice was miming. Alan, who's taking sex out of the seven seas?
Lloyd's List.
Hmm.
Ships have got to be called it, not she. So Lloyd's List are now going to identify all ships as it, not she, which is, you know, historically ridiculous, unacceptable. You know, ships were called females, you know, because they had figureheads. Had a woman with a big bust on the front, they were called she. And if they'd been called he, what they would have had on the front would have frightened horses.
Figureheads were always women, and they're always trying to keep their face out of the water if you look at them, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, like doing breaststroke. That's not to mess up their hair.
Lloyd's List, the 270-year-old Bible of the shipping world, will refer to ships in the neuter rather than the feminine form. In future, the paper's editor, Julian Bray, said it was disrespectful to refer to an ancient old hulk as she, even though Lady Thatcher had specifically asked.
Did Byron not write any jokes about
me? He did, but they were too blue for this programme. Byron's club act was filthy. Oh.
Club act, that's not
the club,
nice.
The club act.
Poor fella. Yeah, he couldn't help having a foot like that. That's right.
Before we start the final round, here's a listing from the Radio Times.
Thursday, BBC One, 11 a.m. Big Strong Boys. Jake Robinson and Gavin Lowe are in Staffordshire to bring new life to a girl's bedroom.
Thanks to Judith France for that. Andy, who or what could be nattering with you at the laundrette of the future?
Is this story about talking washing machines?
It is.
No, how could it be?
You be quiet in Byron Corner over there. As I understand it, in India, previously wealthy people have fallen on hard times. They have to dispense with the services of their servants. and then discovered that they didn't know how a washing machine worked or indeed what a washing machine looked like. So they've created a reassuring washing machine that tells you what to do. Is that correct?
Yep.
And some, I think, some high-caste Indian men have now married their washing machine. Is that correct? And the washing machine addresses you like you're an idiot and says, find the dirty clothes. Now gather them up and open the door. It leads, of course, to that inevitable horror scenario of washing machines that rule the world. Or if we get an evil washing machine, of course, it will tumble spin everyone to death. High-tech washing machines.
Guess the world's first talking washing machine is to go on sale in India.
Byron wrote a poem about
it. If you had a talking washing machine, it would go, oh, tissue.
The machine uses simple phrases such as put the detergent in now, and if you sit on me during the spin cycle, it'll make you go blind. Sue, who is tired of being on the losing end of negative energy?
This is the dressing room at the Cardiff Millennium Stadium. All the teams that have had that dressing room have lost. So they called in a feng shui person to sort of...
And he said it was facing in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Tottenham, you know, they feng shui that because the stand's facing the pitch, you know. And it... Please keep that in for all my Tottenham supporters. Yes, they're trying to disperse because teams are arguing about who should get this jinx dressing room because footballers are not that bright. And...
Do you believe in it?
No.
No, I don't. You had it at the Today Studio, yeah. Didn't you?
What, a
draping Jim Nocte in the right corner.
Well, that was... We did have a rat in the Today Studio on my very last day. I thought
I'd like Humphreys. I don't care what people say. Sorry, I wasn't at all referring to John Humphreys,
not at all. No, but on my very last morning in the Today Studio, a rat... well, some people say it was a large mouse, but I say it was a rat, and I shrieked in the traditional way, but it headed off... They cleaned our fridge for the first time. They hadn't feng shuied that for ages. It was disgusting. And even this rat was so disgusted by this that it sort of turned away from the fridge and hurried off in the direction of the world at one, was not seen until the following morning when Nick Clark went, just before he went on the air.
Was this all on air? I didn't remember you going,
No, most of my sort of noises are before I go on air, usually. As my colleagues will tell
you. I apologise for the audience there who are completely making up their own stuff.
He's forgotten what the question
was. Yeah. Yes, it was the Feng Shui football stadium, which is worth 19 points. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Thanks, Andy.
Paul Darby, a self-styled doctor of Feng Shui.
Is that the Welsh pronunciation?
No, it's apparently the correct pronunciation, but it's originally in Chinese, so why on earth didn't they just transliterate it into the way it sounds? Sorry, just a private obsession. Feng Shui is the ancient Chinese art of repositioning furniture to minimise the effect of negative energy, or cabinet reshuffle, as we call it here. Jeremy, why does the flower of English poetry... Jeremy, why does the flower of English poetry have a far from golden future?
I don't know, I only know two poems.
Probably one of them.
Try this one.
Go on, then. What is it, Alan?
It's fluttering and dancing in the breeze. It's nodding to stately dance.
Is that Wordsworth?
Wordsworth's daffodils.
I don't like him.
Wordsworth's daffodils were short and frilly, which is why Dorothy left. And and these appalling immigrant daffodils that have escaped from somewhere else and are tall and strong and have proud heads and all that stuff are marching in all over the dales and hills.
Were they tiny, then, his daffodils?
A midget.
I know that the skate is now extinct. Are we doing that?
What?
The skate is extinct.
The skate?
Didn't you know?
Yeah, wing of skate. It's horrible.
Oh, I love it.
It's like the hand of death wrapped in a sort of condom. And it's called wing of skate, and you have it in black. And it's extinct, thank God. And it's been replaced by something called slipper limpets, which sound very Nelly, don't they? I know that.
How have they got flowers to fish? That's what I want
to know. Because I don't know this story.
He doesn't know about the flowers, so he's helping out with a bit of fish work.
Daffodils. Our traditional English grey daffodils have been driven out by the... By red American daffodils.
You know what worries me about this story is that in what I read, it said that they've been forced out by daffodils that have escaped from the shots. Now, I'm scared by that. That's Day of the Triffids. That's big daffodils, possibly wrapped in cellophane, marauding through the countryside, trampling down traditional Wordsworth titchy daffodils. It's really rather scary.
Wordsworth's soppy, though, isn't it? It's all, I love the little daffodil, I love the little bunny. I love my little toasty soldiers, and I love some nice honey. Big soppy nutty
bastard. No, I think you'll find Wordsworth was a bit better than that.
No.
No. I think you might be confusing Wordsworth
with
the Teletubbies.
He was smacked off his baps all the time. They were all completely out of it. That's why they had to write so many poems, that lot. All those Lake District people. They were stealing poems and selling them in car boot sales to get opium.
Lyrical Box was a wonderful book, though. There's nothing worse than an 18th century literary joke that falls flat.
Did it fall flat when you cracked it in the 18th century, though?
Oh, is that the milkman already, Simon?
All right, Mr. Sarcastic. We don't have to ask you the last question of the entire show.
I think you've got points for sarcasm, actually, Simon, probably.
Alan, why Alan? Okay. Alan,
here's an interesting point. Oscar Wilde is supposed to have said sarcasm is the lowest form of wit. In fact, he said, oh, sarcasm, that's a very high form of wit, I don't think. Anyway, go on.
Alan, why might we soon be able to eat fish fingers, fish hands and fish elbows?
The codpiece, the fish finger and all those things have been independently cloned, or they can develop them. They take a piece of Jeremy's extinct skate, they take a cell and they can turn it into cod and chips twice. Heard a good joke about that. I don't know if it'll work on radio, though, because it was when I was down at local library in Swiss Cottage and a man ran in and said, I'll have a large cod and chips. And the girl who was serving me said, I'm sorry, sir, this is a library. He said, oh, I'm sorry, I'll have a large cod and chips. Now, I think before we read the final scores, Simon...
Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Oh, Andy. I thought you'd know. Andy.
This is from David Baker and Lois Lloyd of Plymouth, and it's from The Observer, and it says... It was a bumper year for frog falls in Italy. Some say these frogs were probably dropped by birds of prey, but in every case, the frogs were all the same species and age. Synchronized vomiting by herons is an unlikely explanation.
Sue.
This is an extract from the Cape Times, a newspaper I used to know very well. Refers to a story that took place in Johannesburg. I have promised to keep his identity confidential, said Jack Maxim, spokesman for the Sandon Sun Hotel in Johannesburg, but I can confirm he's no longer in our employment. When we asked him to clean the lifts, he spent 4 days on the job. When I asked him why, he replied, well, there are 40 of them, two on each floor. Sometimes some of them aren't there.
Jeremy.
Well, this isn't a cutting, but this is something that appeared on the BBC website, and it was a picture of Blair in Barcelona, and the caption of the picture said, Tony Blair, far right with friends.
Alan.
It's from the Rand Daily Mail. There's a motorist who drove away from a police speed trap with bullets flying past him, told a Krugersdorp magistrate that he thought he was being let off with a caution.
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final scores. Andy and Sue have 16 points, but Alan and Jeremy, God knows how, are winners with 17 points. Before we leave you, here's an item from the Guernsey Press, sent in by Hadrian Woodall.
Speaking at the European Parliament, a French delegate suggested that the milk product crisis was best left to the common sense of the farmers in Normandy. He declared, "Le problème sera résolu par les sagaces Normandie." The interpreter duly translated this as, "The problem will be solved by Norman wisdom."
Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corrin, Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Hardy and Sue McGregor. The chairman was Simon Hoggett and the news is read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by George Poles, Paul McKenzie, Dave Cohen and Simon Littlefield, and the producer was Lucy Armitage.